Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
What is protected by federal labor law? Big ruling from the National Labor Relations Board. More on the strike at Kellogg's. And today on the show, it's Iron Workers Local 512 and the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Friday, October 8th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and one more, and that's Pandora. Barry Davies is going to be our first guest on the show. He's a business manager and financial secretary and treasurer of Iron Workers Local 512. Their jurisdiction covers all of Minnesota, North Dakota, and 21 counties in western Wisconsin. Altogether, they have 1,465 journeymen, 158 apprentices in their local, which is divided into three regions. We'll touch on that. Their website is really, really active. If you go there, it talks about the bad contractors. And also, this is a national campaign, the Deadly Dozen Activities and Hazards. See something, say something. I mean, construction trades, let's face it, all the trades, you're dealing with some dangerous conditions in various industries and iron workers. I mean, considering what they do. Number one, falls through unprotected or inadequate floor opening covers, collapse of secured open web steel joists, lack of fall protection and inadequate use of fall arrest equipment, falls during installation of floor and roof decking, material handling injuries during steel erection and reinforcing steel activities. There's a whole list here. We'll run down that and talk about their safety program. Safety first. Boy, if you don't have safety on your job, you may not come home at the end of the day. That's so darn important. And that's something that trades do better than anything else or anyone else. We talked to a number of locals about dealing with non-union construction. And that's not even part of the equation when they do their training. Non-union. So it's so important. And we'll talk about their apprenticeship program. We'll talk about the infrastructure legislation in Congress that is pretty much stalled, and what the future holds for Iron Workers Local 512. Now, this is the day we normally check in with Joyce Goldstein on labor law changes, and there are many, but here's the problem. Joyce has no voice. I know that sounds kind of weird, but she's suffering from laryngitis, so we're moving her to the end of the month, and she'll be joining us, I believe, on October 26, right after Tommy Buffenbarger. So who's filling in? How about Fred Redmond? Fred Redmond, the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. We had him on the show about 3-4 weeks ago when he got that position. Fred, longtime steel. In fact, he's still with the steelworkers. He's in a transition phase. And in the past couple of days, Fred's got another hat to wear. He was named Executive Vice President of the Alliance for Retired Americans, succeeding Liz Shuler in that position after she was elected President of the Labor Federation after the death of Rich Trumka. So there's a lot of movement in labor right now. We'll talk about that new position. We'll talk about the transition into the AFL-CIO, and we're going to talk about the strikes that are going on in America. There are many. I mean, lots of different industries: healthcare, public transit, coal mining, academia, including grad students at Harvard. In fact, Harvard researchers say the rest of the year, 2021, is poised to be one pregnant with opportunity for the labor movement and a perfect opportunity for the self-described most pro-union president ever to take action. pretty interesting. Well, one big strike going on right now is Kellogg's. Talked about this on the show yesterday. 1,400 workers on strike in four plants. Battle Creek, Michigan, that's the big one. Lancaster, PA, Memphis, Tennessee, and Omaha, Nebraska. The union and the company, which is based in Battle Creek, have been at an impasse at the bargaining table for more than a year. That's according to Dan Osborne, president of the local union in Omaha. The dispute involves an assortment of pay and benefit issues, such as the loss of premium health care, holiday and vacation pay, and a reduction in retirement benefits. And this comes at a time when Kellogg's has record profits. During the pandemic, everybody was eating cereal, munching on snacks, and gaining weight. And Kellogg's was a part of that. This is what Dan says. The company continues to threaten to send additional jobs to Mexico if workers do not accept outrageous proposals that take away protections that workers have had for decades. And the threat to move the work to Mexico doesn't sit well with Dan. This is what he said. A lot of Americans probably don't have too much issue with the Nike or Under Armour hats being made elsewhere or even our vehicles. But when they start manufacturing our food where they are out of the FDA control and OSHA control, I have a problem with that. You should too, when you think about that. Osborne said he expects the company to try to bring non-union workers into the plants at some point to try and resume operations and maintain the supply of its products. The plants have all continued to operate throughout the pandemic, but Osborne said that for much of that time, workers were putting in 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week to keep up production while so many people were out because of the virus. Same thing happened in Nabisco. Those workers were on strike, I want to say, for about 4 weeks, and they finally got pretty close to what they wanted. Black Lives Matter protests and demonstrations against crackdowns on immigration are protected by federal labor law. That according to National Labor Relations Board General Counsel Jennifer Abruzzo. During an online webinar yesterday hosted by Cornell University, the general counsel noted that such protests have the objective goal of mutual aid and protection and concern issues that employers control. She explained that the employer can certainly control that people of color are not discriminated against in their workplace or treated inequitably with regard to pay, hours, and other working conditions. And an employer can certainly control whether or not to hire and not exploit immigrants. The NLRB is already taking action against employers acting contrary to that legal stance. Now, earlier this year, lawyers at the labor board filed suit against Home Depot for violating federal labor law by enforcing a policy that forbids workers from displaying political messages on their aprons, which led to the termination of at least one worker for displaying a BLM slogan. Well, Home Depot also allegedly unlawfully threatened workers with retaliation for collective action regarding racial harassment. Their response: the varied meanings attached to BLM underscore the potential for confusion and controversy if Home Depot were forced to communicate that phrase on its aprons. Home Depot has every right to refrain from engaging in speech likely to confuse the public and spark controversy in this way. So this is pretty significant. Bottom line, according to the new general counsel of the NLRB, protests like what happened with Black Lives Matter, demonstrations against crackdowns on immigration, are all protected by federal labor law. And one more story here before we break. The Nation magazine, which we feature on the show, every month has reported that China appears to be increasing its efforts to crack down on labor unions in Hong Kong, including the nearly half-century-old Hong Kong Professional Teachers Union. Beijing state media outlets have been rallying against Hong Kong unions with rhetoric befitting major crime syndicates, or even calling them terrorist groups, urging the Hong Kong government to stamp down on a chronic poison of society and a malignant tumor that must be destroyed. Wow, now that's an attack on unions. My gosh, the nation notes, fearing investigation and arrest to follow from the state media attacks, some such groups, including the teachers union, have opted to disband. These developments follow protests in 2019 where the Hong Kong labor movement gained momentum. Citywide strikes became less radical and nearly 4,000 new unions sprang up across the city. While the protests and their aftermath, including the June 2020 national security law banning protests, have gained widespread media attention, too few outside of Hong Kong realize that China is also dismantling the city's unions and detaining unionists, a backbone of civil society. I saw this coming because, I mean, Hong Kong was an independent state for, my gosh, hundreds of years. And since China took them over, things are dramatically changing, especially for unions and the workers in those unions. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Barry Davies of Iron Workers Local 512.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more online at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while since we checked in with Barry Davies. Barry is the business manager, financial secretary, and treasurer. Boy, he's got a lot of hats to wear here, of Iron Workers Local 512. And they are out of Minnesota, North Dakota, and also parts of western Wisconsin. Hey, Barry, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
I'm doing great, Flash. It's good to be back on.
Rich Jordan of Iron Workers Local 17. He's not here yet. He's out in the field, but he says hi. He said, tell Barry that he's doing a good job up there. I just wanted to pass that message along, okay?
All right. Well, thanks. You tell him hi for me, too.
Okay. So I was on your website. Website is ironworkers512.com. We'll talk about your jurisdiction here. You got a pretty good territory there. But let's refresh our listeners. You're a business manager. You worked up the union ranks. Let's talk about how you got involved in the iron workers. Go ahead.
I started as an iron worker in 1990 and worked pretty much all over southern Minnesota. In 2013, I went to work in the office as an organizer. Spent a little over a year as an organizer, and then I ran for business agent. I was business agent for just about a year, and our manager got sick. And the other agents and the president came to me and asked if I would like to be the new manager, and 6 years later, here I am.
There you are. How's everything going? Is the union pretty busy right now up there?
Yeah, we're really busy. We've had some real big jobs in northern Minnesota that have taken a lot of manpower. We're pretty much at full employment right now. We were able to take a couple of apprentices classes this year. We took one in the metro area here, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and then we took another one in northern Minnesota. So we increased our apprentices by about 75 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's things are looking good.
Talk to me about your apprenticeship program. We've got a lot of people listen to the show now because we're a podcast on a national level here. Just wondering about the opportunities there. I was reading, I guess it's already more than what's on the website. I see 158. You're saying it's well over 200 right now, apprentices?
Yeah, I think it's just over 220, almost 225 right now. You know, the apprenticeship program is something that we're all pretty proud of. The members contribute a dollar an hour off their paycheck to pay for the apprenticeship program. We have such a big area that, you know, you alluded to it earlier, cover all of Minnesota, all of North Dakota, and about a third of Wisconsin. So we have three training centers, one in St. Paul, one in Duluth, and one in Bismarck, North Dakota. So we have, you know, we train all throughout the whole region. And the membership, you know, it's 100% paid for by the members. And that's something that, you know, even as journeymen, you're pretty proud of our program because, you know, we paid for it, no tax dollars. And it's something that all of our members are really proud of.
So is this a four-year program or five-year program?
We just switched to 4 years. It had been 3 years forever since early 70s when the program started. And now there's so much more that the apprentices need to learn safety-wise, and just the trade has expanded quite a bit. So we've just switched to a four-year program.
When you say the trade has expanded, can you more or less expand on that? Tell me about it.
Sure. You know, it basically used to be we do rebar. Well, now it's all post-tensioning, and you have to have certs. Bonded, post-tensioning, unbonded. There's a lot more safety. We have just about a whole year of safety training and aerial lift training. There's 60-some different weld certifications a member could get now, and it's just too much to cram into 3 years. So we've expanded it. And most of the other ironworker unions are at 4 years, so we just felt that it was time to do that for us too.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, I follow what's going on nationally. In fact, the National Ironworkers are sponsors of this show. We certainly do appreciate that. And in fact, you probably know Wayne Cressup. He does a lot of safety training, and he's been on the show a number of times, and we were talking about these and this is all posted on your website too, the Deadly Dozen activities and hazards. If you see something, say something. I mean, there's a lot of, and this goes for all the trades, if you see something wrong, speak up about it. I'm just wondering how effective that's been for your members at 512, Barry.
It's been real effective. You know, we haven't had a death in a long time. I think safety is honed in and drove into the apprentices from day one. You know, it's come a long way from when I started. My first day on the iron, I was told to go up to the fifth floor and start decking, and there was no tie off. I didn't know how I was going to get up there and how I was going to walk across the beams. And, you know, it was kind of just here you are, go do it. And now, you know, before, once we accept apprentices, they have a 2-week training where we go through all of the safety that they're going to need. OSHA 10, OSHA, subpart R, aerial lift training, first aid, CPR. You know, it's 2 solid weeks of training and safety-related training before they get out onto the job site.
Barry, when did it all change? You're saying that, you know, when you first started, things weren't like that. Were there some injuries, deaths that made people say, wait a minute, we got to do something better here?
Yeah, I believe it started changing in the mid to late 90s. There was, you know, it's a dangerous profession. People want to see everyone go home at night and get with their families. You know, and career-ending injuries and deaths are something that can't be tolerated or shouldn't be accepted as part of the trade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it was just the fact that everyone wants to, you know, we'd all do this for our families and so we can enjoy a family life, and everyone wants to make sure that everyone else could get home at night and be with their families.
Sure. Do you get a lot of help from National on that when it comes to, you know, the latest reports that come out? And, well, I mentioned this Dirty Dozen activity, this campaign. Has that been pretty effective from the leadership?
Yeah, we get a lot of information and tools to use from the International. And, you know, each local wouldn't be able to do that on their own. So it's nice to have the International coming up with their programs and their slogans, like the Deadly Dozen and all of that. You know, that would be hard for each individual local to come up with. So it's been quite helpful to have the International's input on all of that.
Sounds good to me. Barry, I got to take a quick break. Barry Davies joining us. He is the business manager, financial secretary, and treasurer of Iron Workers Local 512. And this is all of Minnesota, North Dakota, 21 counties in western Wisconsin. And they've been really busy. Barry, when we come back, I want to talk about the infrastructure talk out of Washington. We'll touch on that later in the show. Fred Redman, who is currently with the Steelworkers, transitioning over as Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, he'll be joining us as well. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute, sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and Give us a rating. We always appreciate a 5-star rating. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment, and you can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Barry Davies. Barry's with Iron Workers Local 512. Their jurisdiction covers all of Minnesota, North Dakota, 21 counties in western Wisconsin. Barry, I want to talk about politics, not necessarily union politics, but dealing with state legislatures. And Minnesota, I know, is pretty union-friendly. North Dakota, I guess parts of Wisconsin, different kind of story there. How are you navigating through those different political environments?
Well, it is quite a bit different from area to area, region to region. Minnesota, as you said, is pretty labor-friendly, union-friendly. We have a lot of project labor agreements here. North Dakota, not only, you know, they were very hard to get until about 5 years ago, and then they made it impossible to get because the legislature passed a law saying that it would be illegal to have any project labor agreements on any state-funded projects. So you know, North Dakota was right to work in, I believe, 1946. So it's complete opposite of Minnesota. Wisconsin is somewhere in the in between. It takes a lot to navigate all three different states and try to work it the best we can.
Mm-hmm. But you're still active in those respective legislatures, though?
Yes, we are. We have a political action committee that meets monthly, and we try to see what we can do legislatively and get behind the candidates that support us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do what we can. We've been concentrating a lot on the local elections, the county and school boards even. You know, we've got a lot of school work here in Minnesota, and having friendly school boards to put either prevailing wage or project labor agreements on their projects has really been helpful in the last few years. So we've been concentrating on all races and even maybe a little more so with the local officials.
Yeah. Well, this is part of the education process that union brothers and sisters have to do, constantly do, with lawmakers. And I noticed on your website, ironworkers512.com, you have the bad contractors listed. I'm wondering, does that resonate with the politicians? I mean, they know there's a union difference. I mean, we talked about safety on the job and the quality of work from union versus non-union. I'm just wondering, is that that's at least starting to resonate with some of these lawmakers?
I would say yes, it's starting to. Obviously, there's some that don't care as much for the working man and women as others. But I think it makes a difference. No one wants to be known as a legislator that allowed that to happen in their district or their territory. So I think part of it is educating the public and the legislators that this is actually happening. Unless you see it firsthand and you hear the stories, it's hard to believe that kind of stuff could still happen. Mm-hmm. You know, the misclassification of workers, the having everyone be 1099 employees so you don't have to pay workers' comp. And if they get hurt, you drive them to the hospital and drop them at the door. And some of the things that have happened in Minnesota in 2020 and 2021, it's hard to believe unless you actually see it and, mm-hmm. and have proof. And I think they've been receptive to that. Once we make it known.
Yeah. I must say, you have a very, very active website. I love it. There's a lot of information posted there. Again, it's ironworkers512.com. I don't know who puts that together for you, but they're doing a really good job. You can really get informed. And I would imagine a lot of your members go to that for information. Is that a good line of communication for them?
Yes, it is. And even our retirees follow it, and there's a retiree page, and so they can still stay active in the union and know what's going on. But, yeah, our members look at it all the time.
Good, Good. Good to hear. All right. A couple minutes left here. I want to talk about infrastructure. Iron workers are a big part of our infrastructure. Think about all the bridges, deficient bridges that are out there. Well, you gotta get that foundation. You gotta get the structural steel in there. All the elements that go that make up our infrastructure. And again, it starts with the iron workers. What's your thoughts on what may happen here out of Washington? I know it's been a tug of war. But what's the buzz in your area about infrastructure?
Well, I think it's going to get done. It's going to put a lot of people to work. When people are working, the economy is strong. You know, one thing about iron workers and construction workers, when we're working, we spend money and we spend it locally. We want to keep our guys working. I think if cooler heads will prevail and they will get it done. And we have to hope that, because it's needed, not only on the safety issue with the bridges, but it's needed to put our members to work.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the structurally deficient bridges. Is that the case in your area? Do you have a lot of problems with bridges over there right now?
Well, obviously we had the huge 35W bridge that collapsed, but that must be 10 years ago. And I think our rating is a C- for the overall structural integrity of the bridges throughout the state. So there's a lot of work that could be done and needs to be done, because we certainly don't want another disaster like that to happen.
Sure. I'm just wondering, we touched on your apprenticeship program. I'm pretty confident that things are finally going to happen. It just, we don't know when. But I'm kind of concerned if that money starts coming in that you're going to have enough workers to get the work done. Does that mean we have to expand some of the apprenticeship programs there or what? How do you feel about that moving forward?
Yeah, and that's the advantage to us having the three training centers. In 2014 and 15, we had a lot of work coming up, and we could see it on the horizon. At that time, we had over 400 apprentices. So we've scaled back because we have to make sure that there's enough work to keep everyone working. There's no sense having 400 apprentices if 150 of them are not working. So yeah. That's the one thing that we have in our apprenticeship program is we can – fluctuate the number of apprentices based on the expected workload coming up. So we're prepared to do that. We interviewed, we don't have any shortage of applicants to the trade. I think the way we have, not so much a worker shortage, but a job shortage. If the more jobs we have, the more members we'll get and the more apprentices. And looking forward to that challenge. But I think the workforce is there if we have the work.
Very good. We'll leave it on that note. Barry Davies, business manager, financial secretary, as well as treasurer of Iron Workers Local 512. Website is ironworkers512.com. Jurisdiction covers all of Minnesota, North Dakota, and 21 counties in western Wisconsin. Lots of territory there. I'm going to let you go back to work, and you keep up the fight, my brother, and keep in touch with us, okay? Good luck on all your programs there, all right?
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me again.
You got it. Barry Davies on our Lifeline. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Normally at this time, we join with Joyce Goldstein. Joyce is our labor law expert. She has spent her entire career, almost 40 years, dealing with labor law, and there have been so many changes, good changes, on behalf of the National Labor Relations Board. We will cover that later, all because Joyce has no voice. She is suffering from laryngitis, and she said, Flash, I can't do the show. I want to do the show, so we're moving her to October 26. In her place is Fred Redmond. Fred was recently announced to be the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. He's still with the steelworkers, and he's doing some negotiating in Virginia, and he is coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes Liuna to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome a dear friend, longtime contributor to this show we call America's Workforce. And he's currently, well, he's with the Steelworkers. He's also with the Alliance for Retired Americans. He's also the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, Mr. Fred Redmond. How are we doing today, brother?
Doing good, Flash. Happy to be with you.
I'll tell you, you got many hats. I know, Fred, we should point out, has been with the Steelworkers since 1973. You're in that, what, the transition phase right now? Is that how I understand it?
Yeah, right now I'm still doing some work for the Steelworkers. I'm also transitioning into my role as Secretary of Treasury with the AFL-CIO. So, yeah, and then, you know, sometime early next year, I'll be transitioning fully as Secretary of Treasury of the AFL-CIO.
Nice, nice. Now, you're doing some negotiating right now, Newport News, Virginia. Is that right?
Yeah. Here in Newport News, Virginia, the largest local union in the steelworkers is Local Union 8888, and we represent approximately 10,600 shipbuilders that work for Huntington Ingalls here in Newport News, Virginia. And, you know, our members build nuclear aircraft carriers. They provide the Navy's fleet that defend our country, and we're proud of the work that our members do. And we're currently in negotiations. We have a labor agreement that expired November the 14th. So last week we started negotiations and entering into some very critical thoughts about the, you know, future of the operation at Huntington Ingalls, and also trying to do everything we can to improve the life of our members who do this great work.
And how are those talks going? And I bring that up because I'm seeing a lot of companies that have record profits. And I'm just talking earlier about Kellogg's. There's that strike at Nabisco.
Right.
And they're still going to the worker saying, hey, you gotta pay more in your health care. We got to cut back your pensions. I don't know about the wages. So with that being said, what's going on there?
Well, we're still early in the talks. You know, Huntington Ingalls is one of the premier aircraft builders in the world. And they're pretty flush. They may, you know, despite the pandemic last year, even though their profit margins was down a little, they, you know, made enormous profits. And, you know, we have orders in the books that's filled. You know, the books are filled, you know, the capacity in terms of increasing the Navy's fleet. You know, and these are projects that have been paid for, you know. So the operation down here looked good. The company is flush. with cash. And, you know, we'll see where we go. But we're early in the talks. The talks have been very amicable. You know, we're really looking at some training opportunities. This is the largest employer in the Hampton Roads area, Flash. And, you know, there's some great opportunities down there in areas like welding, electricians, pipe fitters. And, you know, right now we're engaged in, you know, having some discussions about how to expand, you know, those opportunities throughout the community and to expand the apprenticeship program. So, you know, we're optimistic that the talks is going to be fruitful and beneficial, not just to our members, but to the overall community here in Hampton Roads.
Well, that's a good attitude to have. In the meantime, things are a whole lot different down in Beaumont, Texas. I was reading about ExxonMobil. You got, what, 650 steel members?
Right.
Yeah, they're locked out. What's the problem there, Fred?
Well, you know, our members, you know, they went to the table and, you know, they wanted to, you know, bargain with the company a fair agreement that was going to allow the company to continue to be profitable, but also share some of the profits that they create. ExxonMobil took a different position. They came in proposing enormous increases in the healthcare costs, the healthcare premiums. They were offering very minuscule increases in pay despite the profits that they made. But our members, you know, at the expiration of the contract, you know, our members, you know, offered to work without a contract, and the company gave our members the last, best, and final offer, as they referred to it. And our members rejected it, but they said they were willing to continue to talk, and the company locked them out. So, you know, it's one of those situations, Flash, that really, really highlight the deficiencies in the labor laws in this country, where an employer could walk away from the table and, you know, deny workers the right to come to work, you know, and try to starve them back to death. So it's really, really evident, and this is a good example, why we need to pass the PRO Act to change the labor laws in this country.
Absolutely. So what are they doing? Are they bringing in scabs down there?
Well, they're trying to run the refinery with management folks. They brought in management folks from other locations, and they're trying to run. And they do have some outside contractors that's running. So from our reports, the company is running at about 50% capacity. You know, their orders is, you know, they haven't been able to reach their orders. So, you know, we hope that they'll come back to the table. Our offer is still there to come back to the table to try to resolve this.
Yeah.
But they have taken a take-it-or-leave-it attitude. But like I said, they're running at half capacity, and they're doing that mostly with management personnel. But there is some contractors in the plant.
Yeah, that's pretty scary there. And a refinery yet, you know.
Right.
That is dangerous operation there. You need skilled
Absolutely.
Labor. Yeah, like the steel workers. You know, you talk about labor law, and I don't know if you caught this. I was talking about this at the beginning of the show. We have a new sheriff there as general counsel, Jennifer Abruzzo, at the NLRB.
Yeah.
And she ruled yesterday that protests like Black Lives Matter protests and any demonstration against, like, crackdowns on immigration are protected by federal labor law. That is huge. That is huge. And you've probably seen here in the last, my gosh, now that we have the right people on that board, things are starting to change. That's got to make you feel pretty good, Fred.
Well, it does. It does. And that particular ruling is typical of the type of people that this administration is putting on very important boards and very important agencies that affect the lives of workers. So, you know, look, I mean, we are feeling the effects of this administration in a very positive way by the ruling that you referred to. But, you know, also, you know, what we're seeing from this administration is a, you know, it's a commitment toward working families against a very, very critical political backdrop, you know. This president and this administration have held firm. We've seen, you know, some good rulings like the one that you referred to coming out the Labor Relations Board. We've opened up a very, very good relationship with Catherine Tai, the U.S. Trade Ambassador, where we're literally at the table, when I say we, organized labor, discussing important trade deals that, you know, could affect the lives of workers in this country. So the landscape have changed, and what we have to do is rally behind this president now to see and try to ensure that we can get some critical legislation passed that's going to improve the lives of workers throughout this country.
Fred, you talked about the PRO Act, which is actually the Richard Trumka Protect the Right to
Organize. Oh, absolutely. Act. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Flash. Yeah.
Yeah, got to do that. Got to say that from this point on. It's my understanding that there is some language in the reconciliation bill that incorporates various parts of the PRO Act. I mean, what do we know about that, right? I think part of it deals with, like, you know, penalties for corporations to violate labor law. Where do you know where we are with some of that? I know the bill is going back and forth in Washington, but what do we know about it right now, Fred?
Well, the bill is going back and forth, and in the reconciliation bill, you know, there's provisions in the bill that will prohibit employers from doing things such as, you know, such as what's happening in Beaumont, you know. Locking workers out once, you know, when workers have offered to continue to, you know, negotiate. But the key thing is it improves the right of workers. And there's language in the bill that will improve the right of workers to join unions if they elect to do so. It will prohibit work employers from the type of intimidation that we see now in organizing campaigns. It will penalize, you know, employers for delaying and holding union elections once an election has been certified by the NLRB. And, you know, the provisions under the Reconciliation Act is really meant to, you know, allow workers to join unions if they would like to. And it gives, and there's some very severe penalties in that piece of legislation for employers who use tactics that we have seen over many years to intimidate workers from exercising that right. So, look, it's positive, you know, in terms of the reconciliation bill. It's, you know, look, it's back and forth. You know, we don't think that the bill is going to reach the level in terms of the amount of the bill that we would like to see. But, you know, we know that some things is going to probably be cut from the bill if they go through these discussions. But,
yeah,
you know, we feel very strongly that the labor provisions is going to make it through the final cuts and become law because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
The only way that you're going to, you know, increase the landscape in America as it comes to workers in the middle class is to allow workers the right to freely join unions if they like to without any impediment from the employers. And these are some of the things in the reconciliation bill that are invoking penalties if employers try to impede that.
And that's primarily why there's a lot of opposition to this bill, especially from the right wing, because the stats bear this out. There's about 60 million people in this country. That's a chunk. 60 million people would join a union if it wasn't so difficult. If they if they didn't think they were going to lose their job. I mean, you speak out on the job. Oh, he's a union sympathizer. We got to get rid of him. You've heard that story many, many times. So,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. With employers intervening by holding focus groups on company time and intimidating workers, threatening the loss of their jobs if they join unions. And, you know, it's and the exact number is 68 from recent polls. 68% of the American people feel as though, you know, support unions and feel as
right.
though they serve a very vital purpose when it comes to the U.S. economy. So, yeah, look, these are positive developments. And if we could move the impediment of employee intimidation, then we think that more and more workers in this country will express the right to collectively bargain, to do the things that it takes in order to improve wages and to, create benefits and negotiate benefits that's going to, benefit workers and their families. So, you know, we got a lot of work to do to get the legislation passed. So, we're going to keep pounding the ground where, you know, while I'm in Virginia, we're going to be doing some door knocks while I'm here. And we got a big governor's race in Virginia. But, you know, we need to continue to advocate behind this president's Build Back Better agenda because it's good for the American people.
And the people want it. I mean, the polling shows.
Absolutely.
You ask people about infrastructure. Yeah, get it done. Get it done.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, I know you got to run, Fred, but one more question here.
Sure.
And I'm seeing a whole lot of strikes going on. I mean, Harvard graduate students, nurses, public transit. You know what's going on at Warrior Met down in Alabama. I mean,
right.
Kellogg's mentioned that. We just had a month-long strike for Nabisco workers. What's your take on what's going on here in America right now, Fred?
Well, we're still in this pandemic, but, you know, coming through the last year and a half, where we have seen, by no fault of anybody's, I mean, we have seen a decline in the economy, and it was basically attributed to the outbreak of COVID. But now that we're coming back, you know, what we have seen is, you know, the workers who kept this country running. I'm talking about first responders. I'm talking about folks who got up and every day and went to work during the pandemic, who was considered essential. You know, what the workers are saying now, if these companies come back, we want to come back with them. Workers is actually sharing the wealth that they created during the pandemic and continue to create. So I think what we're seeing, Flash, is workers standing up and saying throughout one of the most difficult times that we have seen in this country, throughout this national health crisis, workers delivered throughout this country, whether it's healthcare, public sector, or private sector. And what they're saying is now is our time. You know, as companies are coming back, as the economy is expanding, is predicted to improve over the next 12 months, we're going to see a resurgence of the GDP is rising. And as the country starts rebounding from this most difficult time in our history with this pandemic, workers are saying they want to come back with their companies and share in the wealth. So we're seeing this all over the country, you know, and you mentioned, you know, companies like Nabisco, and we're talking about the mine workers in Alabama and just throughout this country. You know, workers are standing up, and it's a sign that workers believe in the right to collectively bargain and organizing, the resilience and the attitude of workers who are now taking a position, which we always have.
Yeah.
But you see more of it now, and, you know, collective bargaining is on the rise with more workers wanting to organize and join unions. So we're in a good space right now. What we have to do is support this president and get the proper legislation to make it happen.
Couldn't have said it better. Fred, I love you having on the show. We're going to do this on a regular basis. Once you get situated there as Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, I'm going to let you get back. You got a busy day ahead, especially with these negotiations. So you take care, stay safe, and we'll keep in touch. Okay, brother?
All right. Take care, Flash. Looking forward to working with you in the future on a regular basis.
You got it. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, it's LIUNA Local 11 and the Painters District Council 7. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. find out more information online at labortools.com.